¡Vamos, amigos! Welcome back to the Talking Soccer Podcast, episode 47. Really close to 50 episodes here, boy. Should we do something special for episode 50? Maybe bring on a special guest? I have someone in mind, but I'm going to keep that a secret for now. We do have some great guests coming up. We have one planned for sure just before the MLS season kicks off. Tons of ins and outs going on right now with the transfer window open worldwide. But anyways, you ever have a plan to just do something and then all of a sudden a wrench is thrown in that plan and all of your hard work is just thrown out the door? Well, that just happened. Manchester United lose 2-0 to Burnley. So we'll talk a little bit about that and the impacts that'll have on my life and yours moving forward. But the plan for today was to take a look at the last 2 days of EPL action. Of course, it's Wednesday, as always. Thursday for you, likely when you're listening to this. It's 5:45 p.m. on the East Coast, and I'm your host, Duke. You can find me on Twitter, at DukeDFS. If you want to follow my DFS, which is daily fantasy sports action, you got to do it over at elitefantasy.com. All my betting info over at elitesportsbetting.com today. Gave away a freebie on twitter.com, -1 for Leicester. They went ahead, blew out West Ham today, 4-1. We'll talk about that a little bit. Also had a parlay with Tottenham and Leicester that won, 2-0. But we have insane deals going on, not just for DFS, not just for betting, not just for our season long, which we do have MLB coming up and Vlad and the whole crew over there. Always crushes it, but this price is going to go up. It's got to go up. There's nowhere for it to go but up. And these subs are for 365-day access. It's not season-specific, so there's no guarantee that these prices hold, and I can't see any way possible they'll go down. So this is the best thing to do, is get this deal right now while you can. Okay, look, we are going to talk about other games, but humor me for a minute here today, because Manchester United, at home, as a favorite against Burnley, loses 2-0. Doesn't just lose. Didn't really even trouble Nick Pope in goal. This is a couple stats for you here. This is the first defeat at home to Burnley since 1962. This is back-to-back losses for Man United. Our back four is in shambles at the moment. They're tactically just totally lost. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, club legends in danger of losing his job. United are simply in a crisis mode. We need to get rid of one man and one man, and specifically, maybe two, maybe three, maybe four. But Ed Woodward has got to go from the footballing side. Look, Manchester United have now lost to six teams in the bottom half of the Premier League just this season. Burnley, Watford, Bournemouth, Newcastle, West Ham, and Crystal Palace. And this was the first real game without Marcus Rashford. And holy hell, was he papering over the cracks. Am I right? I mean, Martial, God bless him, he's not a number nine. He's not a forward. Decent at holding the ball up, but he needs to get the ball facing the back line to cause them problems. Dan James, God bless him, he's not ready for this level. Wasn't bought to be ready for this level. Rashford's been worked to death to the point where he has two stress fractures in his back. Juan Bissaka, brilliant defender, but a baby deer going forward. So why do we use a system that requires width from our defenders? I actually like what Ole's done with the roster and getting rid of some of the dead wood, getting younger, but he needs to bring in players as well. And they're not done. They still need to get rid of Phil Jones. They need to get rid of Jesse Lingard. Juan Mata, I don't mind him, but he's blocking Angel Gomez, who may leave. That's another issue. Nemanja Matić needs to go. But look, Matić was the only one pressing forward today, playing forward, passes over 15, 20 yards. He actually hasn't been awful over the last two games, but he's not a solution past this year. He shouldn't have been a solution from January moving forward even for this year. But McTominay gets hurt, Pogba gets hurt, you have to shove him in there. And you know who was awful today? Awful, awful, awful. Harry Maguire. £80 million Harry Maguire. And I'm glad he's a United player, a United captain now. But he sure didn't play like it today. At fault for both goals, really. Poor marking on Chris Wood, goal. Wasn't on his feet. J. Rodriguez shows him outside, but leaves him an angle to get an absolute howitzer on frame that beats De Gea. No one will look good next to Phil Jones, all right? That much is clear. But that was a 2 out of 10 performance from Harry Maguire, and you simply cannot have that from your Man United captain. So how would I fix it? Well, Erling Haaland would look good, wouldn't he? Man, we didn't want to put a release clause in the contract. Who gives a shit, man? You need players. You need talent. How about perhaps one of the best forwards in the world who's 18 years old? Would that help us? There's a lot that we can go. We'll go through it here in a second. But look, it's as simple as this. You need to change one thing and one thing only. If I can change one thing and one thing only, I want to bring in a director of football. Firing 10 managers and changing nothing at the top just means you're bringing in more players who fit a manager who will be gone in 2 years. Nemanja Matić is a Mourinho player. Lukaku is a Mourinho player. I mean, what style of football do we want to play? Look at what is dominating the world right now. Man City, possession-based, fast-attacking soccer. Liverpool, possession-based, fast-attacking soccer. PSG, possession-based, fast-attacking soccer. Bayern, possession-based, fast-attacking soccer. Shit, Ajax, possession-based, fast-attacking soccer. Do United have the majority of possession in most games? Sure. But when do they ever have fast-attacking soccer? Soccer against the big sides who will have more of the ball, who will leave space in behind, that's when you see it. United simply cannot create against a side that puts two banks of four or five in the box. They just can't break them down. And Ole's been in the job for over a year now. So if he can't implement a style of play to combat this, it's on him. Are the players top ends? No. Are some of them crap? Yes. But you know what? You have to adjust. Adjust to the roster that you have. So look, I hear all the talk of Pochettino. What has he won? Nothing. Is he a better manager than Ole? Yes. Would he be an improvement? Yes. Is he the right man for the job? Who cares? Because if Ed Woodward is still in charge of transfers, nothing will change. He's incompetent. In a way, I do feel a touch bad for the board because you know what? United are known to have money, even though they probably don't because the Glazers have sucked $1 billion out of the club over the last 15 years. At the same time, when Abramovich is putting $1 billion into the club, when, you know, Qataris or Saudis or whatever the hell owns Man City are shoving $1 billion in the club. At the same time, we're pulling $1 billion out of ours. But anyways, clubs charge more to Man United thinking we have money. United move numbers for papers. They drive clicks. So every possible rumor that's real or not real is put into the papers. It has to be exhausting for Ole to answer transfer questions every single press conference. But look, go get the players. Just go get them. Be a big club. Have a long-term plan. Spend the money. Bring in the studs. I don't want United to be the Galacticos of Real Madrid. We cannot get away from our roots, but this team is years away from competing without outside help. Make other teams sign NDAs about transfer fees. Restructure the wage bill. Get this thing moving in the right direction because tonight, that was the emptiest I've seen this stadium in 36 years. You need players all over the field. You need a second center back. I think you sell David De Gea. Let Dean Henderson have the range. Sergio Romero could do the job. If we don't have money, we need to sell players. So De Gea maybe goes. I think Pogba should stay, but if he's not happy, get his ass out of there. Take that money, reinvest it into the team. You bring in Bruno Fernandes today, not tomorrow, today. Pay the money. Keep the Sharks away, because if this thing drags on to the summertime, number one, we're not going to finish top six, let alone top four. That's a fact. And number two, that price is going to keep going up and up and up. And you'll just have a disgruntled player, even if we do get him in the summertime, who's wondering why we couldn't get it done in January when he was ready to move, when United desperately needed him. And with every passing performance that we put out there, his price goes up because it's quite obvious there's no creative force in this United side. I think Fred's usable. I think Martial and Rashford are usable. I think Dan James is a great piece off the bench. I think Brandon Williams is one for the future. Wan-Bissaka in the right system can be a quality player. Harry Maguire is our captain for the next 5-6 years. After that, get rid. I mentioned Angel Gomez earlier. We put Juan Mata on a 100-some-thousand-pound contract a week to do what? Play once every 5 games and block a chance for a young player to come through? A young player who, by the way, his contract expires this summer? Why would he stay around if he's not playing in this United side? What happens when they do bring recruits in? You know what Bruno Fernandes is to Angel Gomez? One more player between him and first team action. So why would he stay? And don't get me started on Heath Chong, the great player from Holland who's been at United for what, 5 years now, something like that? All this hype around him throughout his youth career. Plays for the under-23s, dominates for the under-23s, but hasn't done a damn thing for United. So I don't blame Ole not playing him here. But once again, we have a professional player, a young, promising player who's going to leave the club for absolutely nothing. Minimal fees. Actually, not even minimal fees, because we shouldn't even be owed training compensation for his youth development. It's a sad state of affairs in Manchester right now, how the mighty have fallen. And there's no easy fix, because look, Ed Woodward was the mastermind of this takeover built on and around debt that the Glazers have saddled the club with. The Glazers aren't going anywhere. You know what United's share price has done since the IPO? Gone up. Why would they get rid of that cash cow that's happening every single year? I mean, who is going to force the Glazers to sell? Are the fans literally not going to show up? No. They paid hard-earned money to go to these games. Is a protest worth it? When these ugly Americans are going to sit in their director's box 3 times a year and keep counting their cash. It's a sad state of affairs, man. I know this isn't a Man United podcast, but by God, was that an ugly afternoon. And an afternoon when, quite frankly, I had high hopes for the team. I knew how important Rashford was to this side, but to see that team go out and play like that and lose 2-0, first time since 1962 that Manchester United have lost at home to Burnley. So that's where I'm at. How are you guys doing? Should we talk about something else? We maybe bring the spirits up here just a little bit. Let's go to the updated Premier League table. So no Prem action this weekend. We do have some FA Cup games, which we're not going to preview here, but I'll be jumping in and out of the chats on both EliteSportsBetting.com and EliteFantasy.com if we do have some DFS slates. But we're not going to go through that here this podcast. Let's talk about the Prem and where we stand now. So through basically 24 games, right, for most of the teams, Liverpool 13-point lead on Man City, but they've only played 22 games. They do play tomorrow, which would be Thursday, with a really good opportunity to get 3 more points there. Open that lead up to 16 within just 1 game in hand. But City are on 51 points, sitting in second, 24 games played. I'm not going to do the games played for everybody here, guys. Third place, Leicester City. Fourth place, Chelsea, who just dropped 2 points against Arsenal in a game when they were up a man for 70 minutes, I think it was, maybe even 80 minutes after David Luiz gets that ridiculous red card. When, you know, I've had arguments with people about whether the red card penalty is too penal. I would love to hear what you guys think about that. Because for me, if it's an obvious goal, we're not going to call it a goal scoring opportunity, an obvious goal like what happened with Chelsea or with Bournemouth against Norwich, when I think it was Francis, who's the center back, goes and makes an unbelievable save on a sure goal, ball going in the net. For me, that's a red card and a penalty. But if a player's going, let's say we see it quite often where a player beats a defender and is now going in one-on-one with the goalie, but maybe going towards the near post and then does the thing where they maybe lunge, they just get a touch on the ball, but the goalie's coming out. So the attacker gets a touch on the ball and the goalie gets a touch on the player. He's the last man, right? But the ball's going away from the goal, or it's a bang-bang play. for me, that's harsh for a red card and a penalty. That's more of a yellow card or a penalty. And I had a decent suggestion in the chat over on elitesportsbetting.com from one of our subscribers over there, Greg, who was talking about this being too penal. And so we basically decided on, well, what if the teams had a choice? So essentially it could be a PK, a penalty, and a yellow card, or a red card for the player and a direct free kick. Imagine how fun that would be. You got your human wall standing in the goal with a free kick from 4 yards away. You have 11 guys standing in the goal line, and you have the space basically between their head and the crossbar to aim for, assuming they don't jump. I can tell you this much as a former player, I don't want that. I don't want to be in that damn wall with the shot coming in from 4 yards away. No, thank you. But I digress. Chelsea dropped 2 points there. Arsenal, awesome job coming back. Yet another example of Mikel Arteta setting up his team incorrectly, but making in-game adjustments to get a result. Good job by them. Fifth place, Manchester United. How? The rest of the Prem's awful. Sixth place, Tottenham on 34 points as well. Seventh, Wolverhampton Wanderers on 34 points. Those three teams, United, Tottenham, and Wolves, tied on 34 points. On 33 points, eighth place, Sheffield. Southampton into the top 10 for the first time this season, sitting in ninth on 31 points. Arsenal in 10th. Crystal Palace, 11th. Everton, 12th. Burnley, beating United 2-0, jumps up to 13th place with 30 points, who were realistically in the conversation for relegation prior to this result. Newcastle in 14th on 30 place, and then 30 points. And then we drop down. Brighton on 25 points. Villa on 25 points. West Ham on 23 points. And just out of the relegation zone on goal differential at minus 11. 18th place, Bournemouth, minus 14. Goal differential on 23 points. Watford also on 23 points. Back into the relegation with their loss to Villa here late. Big six-pointer there on minus 15 goal differential. And bottom of the table, worst team in the league, Norwich City, sit on 17 points. So that is your up-to-date table. West Ham plays Liverpool tomorrow, I believe. I'm sorry. Let's see. Nope. West Ham just played today and lost. Wolves, sorry, play Liverpool tomorrow. Liverpool, obviously the class of the division here. City, I think, a clear and away second. Leicester coming back to the table more and since the new year, but maybe finding their feet. Unfortunately, Jamie Vardy did go out today with a hamstring injury. Kind of funny, kind of not funny, but just being emotional, trying to clear ball into the stands. Looks like he ripped his hamstring up, so we'll just see how long he can be out there. Iheanacho has filled in well off the bench, but can't get it done from the first whistle. For me, the top four is set, with Tottenham having an outside shot of getting in. Chelsea, unstable at best. They have 8 losses this season, as do Man United and Tottenham Hotspur. How about Sheffield having 7 losses? Arsenal having 6, but Arsenal, those 12 draws are really killing them thus far. I think they're out of the top 4 race, but really, they're only 6 points past Chelsea at the moment. So for me, the final top 4, if we're finishing it now, would be Liverpool, City, Leicester, Chelsea. I think the way it sits today is the way it'll sit come middle May and the season ending. But let's talk about from a DFS perspective how we did, and we'll talk specifically about cash games. So yesterday's slate, let's start with that. Let's see here. I cashed with a score of 103 on the dot, and my core four, if you will, didn't do great. But unfortunately, it was due to some outstanding or unbelievable circumstances. You have Matt Ritchie putting in 9 crosses, Newcastle scoring 2 goals, both off crosses, by the way, and not grabbing a piece of any assist. Didn't get a shot on goal, playing that left wing back role. Of course, that's going to hurt his chances in the attacking third as far as progressive numbers, progressive passes. His assist ratio from the wing is actually pretty decent. He was on set pieces, so I didn't mind the play. He was only 15% owned in the $25 double up. At $5,000, I thought it was a decent play. Scored 8 points, not bad. Kevin De Bruyne, uber chalk, 57.8%. got 20 points at his 11K salary. Decent turnout there. Callum Hudson-Odoi was the obvious play. 7.5K over on DK. Picks up 19.7 points. No goals, but put in 12 crosses, obviously on set pieces there as well. One assist, one shot. Now, and then Lucas Dean. I mean, 86% owned. If you didn't have Lucas Dean, are you even playing DFS? 17 points at his 7K salary, over 2X. We'll take that every time. Got a little different here with Pascal Gross and Matt Ritchie. And then the defenders, obviously, were the big difference from Tuesday's slate. But Pascal Gross, here's what I thought. Number one, they were playing Bournemouth, who have been trash. Number two, when Pascal Gross and Aaron Moy have been on the field at the same time, Pascal Gross has had the majority, if not the monopoly, on set pieces. Brighton were favorites, decent favorites, by the way, even though they were away, to a tumbling Bournemouth side. For his price, which is a little bit elevated at 7.8K, I figured we get 10 points at worst, but 14 points would be quite reasonable. Of course, he was sacrificed. Bournemouth put up an absolute stinker, even though they were dominating, and I mean dominating the first 35 minutes of this match. Pascal Gross comes out. He did get a goal, by the way. It was an own goal, but comes out after 60 minutes as Bournemouth make a triple change and go on to lose that game 3-1. So interesting situation there. But Matt Ritchie, I thought, was a decent play. At defense, I went a little funky, right? I liked City to get forward, obviously have, 60, 70, 80% of the ball. Took a chance on Kyle Walker at 4K. He was only 4% owned. Certainly wasn't a safe play. Matt Target was more the play in that range. And quite honestly, I just didn't think I made the right play. 4K for Walker. Was a decent spot. He finished with 6 points, so that's not good enough in cash. But for the extra $200, I really wish I would have gone with Matt Target there. Hector Bellerin, I loved for his price. I actually was all over Ansley Maitland-Niles, but Bellerin jumps in, and for a couple $100 less, really is a plug and play for me. Got bailed out, obviously, with the goal there lately, ending up with 16 points. And really the differentiator between me cashing and not cashing. The rest of my roster, relatively solid. Hector Bellerin's goal was really the result of me cashing versus not cashing. I think we got a little bit unlucky with Pascal Gross. And Matt Ritchie was, you know, like I said, perhaps a decent play. Now, as far as ownership goes, surprised at how owned Wilf Zaha was, but for his price, I guess it makes sense. James McCarthy was the one that really jumped off the page for me. He was 46% owned. And look, I understand with Kevin De Bruyne's price, we need to find value somewhere. James McCarthy is a crash, bang, boom central midfielder. He is a CDM to the max. I would have actually preferred, I don't even know. I mean, I guess maybe who in that range? There really wasn't anybody in that range, which is why I built my roster the way I did. Diego Rico was owned 42% of the time. Again, a little curious on this. I understand he's, you know, has some set piece equity, and Bournemouth were at home in basically a must-win game, but I really thought Brighton would have a boatload of the possession, which they ended up with, let's see here, 66% of possession, which they did. Brighton also outshot Bournemouth 21-11. So again, part of the reason why I wanted a little piece of Pascal Gross. They also had three big chances to Bournemouth's too. So for me, you know, I understood a little bit why you go to Rico. It wasn't the optimal play for me. Jack Grealish at 33% owned was a super curious one for me as well. Chalaba was the preferred punt at midfield for me. So really for me, the only miss that I had here was Matt Target for that extra 200. I could have easily gone down from Bern Leno to another goalkeeper, got the extra money for Matt Target. Regardless, probably would have cashed, but made money there that day. As far as Wednesday goes, poor build by your boy. Poor build by your boy. Obviously, these smaller slates, relatively tough. As far as construction goes, generally, you got to get it right. It's a small slate. There's only a few options you can consider for cash. And the obvious build was a midfield of James Maddison and Kenny McLean. McLean was supposed to be on set pieces. I actually saw what's his face? Dogby or whatever his name is. The new guy for Norwich who took a few, Duda. Obviously, Timu Pukki converted the penalty kick, but McLean, for his price at 3.9K with no Buendia, plus playing Madison at, you know, 10,300 as a big favorite against West Ham, those were the spots that we need to start there. At forward, a couple of different options to consider. Eric Lamela ended up being the positive correlation for the rest of the build for most of the field. I didn't end up on Lamela. To me, he and Lo Celso are a little bit redundant within the system. Lamela playing further forward does have a slight set piece equity, but we saw Lo Celso today taking corners. Lamela is more open play value than set piece value, and I just liked others better. Lucas Moura was who I chose in that spot. Didn't work out. Lamela with 5.38 points, Moura with 4.04. So, I mean, relatively close to the same price. I actually think Lamela was a little bit more expensive. Similar results there, just a point difference with about the same price. I also liked Manchester United to win, so I was heavy on Anthony Martial and Juan Mata. Mata ended up being popular today, which I was a little bit surprised with. I actually thought Fred was going to be the better play, but I thought maybe Mata would have more upside. Both did well. Mata 14 points at just 5.3K. Over 2X, nearing 3X there. Fred actually got to 13.7 points, I think around 6K or so. So he was nearly 2X, a fine play there. But what you did at defender was really the key. And what unfortunately happened to me was I had Pablo Zabaleta as my punt defender, 1.5 points, not great. But then I had Serge Aurier as my other defender. I ended up going up to De Gea and down from Aurier to Ben Chilwell before I ended up making last-minute changes and then not hitting save on my lineup. I'd gotten back on Aurier. But really, what I needed was Roberto Pereira, who was the stud of the slate, scoring 27.72 points and was decently owned in some contest and really was a big difference maker in GPPs. But from cash perspective, why am I spending 5.8K for Roberto Pereira? Why am I spending 5K on Ben Chilwell? Well, it's for safety. It's a big favorite on a small slate. We think Leicester's going to win. We think they're going to score goals. We want players who are going to get forward and attack. Chilwell was actually fine. 5K, went for 13 points on a normal slate. That'd be great. Pereira going for 27 points was a huge differentiator. But for me, the play was, and ended up being 63% owned, Serge Aurier, 17.34 points. Again, good for 3X at 5.5K or whatever he ended up with. That was the smart play. So I'm a little bit upset with myself that I didn't get there. Again, only a 4-point difference between he and Chilwell. So really, point for dollar, very similar play. But the differentiator here, Heung-min Son. At his price, it was between he and Vardy. Realistically, I thought Vardy had better goal odds. Again, I liked Leicester to win. I couldn't get to Vardy in cash because I can't spend that much for a goal-dependent player on a small slate. I didn't think his ownership would be enough, really, for me to get there. So for me, the play was Son if you're in that range. What I ended up doing, and again, this was my mistake, was going up to David De Gea with the hopes and dreams of a clean sheet win, and down to down to Chilwell off Aurier, and then down to Martial off Heung-min Son. Overall, and by the way, my goalkeeper was going to be, I believe it was Tim Krul was what I landed on with that build. Regardless, that cost me 15 points and a cash, essentially those moves. And that's really what it comes down to from a cash build and structure. We want to get our core together, and then we have to figure out the pieces around us that are going to get us the win. And for cash specifically, I tend not to pay up for goalkeeper. You look at an example today. We have a game. Let's even take West Ham, for instance. We think Leicester's going to win, so the win equity is quite low for a Darren Randolph. We think they're going to take a lot of shots, so the save equity is quite high. His price is always also quite low. Can we get to 2-3X, even in a loss? If so, that's a person I'm considering in goalkeeper. Can we get to 2 or 3X for David De Gea at 5.7K? Well, to do that, he's going to have to make Well, first of all, he's going to have to get what? Clean sheet and a win. There's 10 points. And then we need another two saves to get to realistically 2x, right? Basically 6k. We need 12 points, clean sheet, win, and one save. Today, he makes no saves, gives up two goals, minus 3.62 for my goalkeeper. Not great. Not great. Part of the reason why I don't pay up for goalkeeper. I didn't mind Hugo Lloris once I saw he was in, but he was more expensive than De Gea. Nick Pope, for the builds available, was the obvious choice. Win equity, probably small. Clean sheet equity, probably small. Save equity, quite high. And of the three games, I would put them second as far as chances to win. I didn't think West Ham had a chance in hell to win. I think West Ham had a decent chance. Burnley and then Norwich, I thought, would actually be probably the least likely to win, knowing what was at stake for Tottenham in this game on Wednesday. Ends up Norwich loses 2-1. Actually, we're tied 1-1 late in the second half. Burnley end up winning 2-0. So Pope was the play, and he ended up being 45.5% owned in the $25 double up. So when you think about Pereira and Nick Pope, that's 50 points between the two. Without the two, you have no chance in a GPP. And with Pope's ownership in a double up situation or a cash situation, you really have a lot of ground to make up if you don't have that particular goalkeeper. So really, I think my errors today were going down to Ben Chilwell from Serge Aurier, minor error, going down from Son to Martial, although I don't mind that play, even in hindsight. Martial ends up with 11.52 points, had a couple shots on goal, five shots total. I mean, if you would have told me pregame Martial is going to get five shots, I'm perfectly fine with that play. Mata ended up working out 14.2. Zabaleta didn't work out. Again, they're playing with the three center backs, including Cresswell, and then the wing backs of Masuaku and Zabaleta. Zabaleta actually got in some decent areas. He just didn't cross the damn ball. One cross, one foul drawn, one foul committed. Not a great play there. So again, 2 days where we cash one day, we don't cash the other. But really the first day bailed out a little bit with that Hector Bellerin goal. And the core itself was just okay. Today the core was decent. Madison, McLean, Mata, Lucas Moura. If you trade out him for Lamella, do I still cash? No. It was really Nick Pope from David De Gea that was the true difference there. So look, a lot of these times it comes down to 2v2, 1v1, 3v3 decisions. When you're making these lineups, take screenshots, right? Take screenshots, file them away so you can go back and look at different builds you have if you're only a one lineup kind of person. I typically make more than one lineup. Today, specifically, I made one, but I do have several screenshots that I'll have to go back and check out as far as different builds that I landed on and figure out which one I actually liked the best. Didn't mind my build. Pre-game, games kick off, early games kick off. I see Eric Lamella, 59% owned. What am I missing? Nick Pope was the big one, 45% owned. And goes off for 24 points with a win, which is how we started this podcast, with Manchester United sucking butt. But, hey, we're back next week. Big podcast coming up next Wednesday. Back to the EPL action next week. And again, FA Cup action this weekend. Do not sleep on the FA Cup betting. We did a round robin. Of course, we'll have the opening line on Friday talking about Saturday and Sunday's action for the FA Cup. If you have anything you like, as always, feel free to hit me up in the DMs. If you have a bet you like, say, Duke, what do you think about this? I'll give you my opinion. Choose to play it, choose not to play it. All I'm going to do is put my brain on it and tell you what I think. You go with it from there. For this week's Talking Soccer Podcast, I'm your host, Duke. We'll be back next week with more action in the EPL. Adios.